Welcome to the Moneyball Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Harry Glorikian. This series is all about the data-driven transformation of the healthcare and life sciences landscape. Each episode, we dive deep through one-on-one interviews with leaders in the new cost-conscious, value-based healthcare economy. We look at the challenges and opportunities they're facing and their predictions for the years to come. So my guest today is Leah Binder. Leah is the president and CEO of the Leapfrog Group. The Leapfrog Group represents employers and other purchasers of healthcare who call for improved safety and quality in hospitals. She is a regular contributor to Forbes.com, the Huffington Post, and the Wall Street Journal Expert Forum. She was named on Becker's list of the 50 most powerful people in healthcare in 2014, and consistently cited by Modern Healthcare among the 100 most influential people and top 25 women in healthcare. She has served on numerous national boards and councils, including the Institute of Medicine Collaboration on Patient Engagement, the Healthcare Financial Management Association Leadership Advisory Committee, PCORI, Healthcare Systems Advisory Panel, AARP's Champions for Nursing Strategic Advisory Council, and the National Priorities Partnership Board. Prior to her current position, she spent 8 years as vice president at Franklin Community Health Network, an award-winning rural hospital network in Farmington, Maine. She previously worked as a senior policy advisor for the office of Mayor Rudolph Giuliani in New York City, and started her career at the National League for Nursing, where she handled policy and communications for more than 6 years. Thank you very much for joining me today. Good to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a privilege.
So we had spoken quite a bit back when I was putting together the book Moneyball Medicine, but for those people who are not familiar with the Leapfrog Group, can you tell us a little bit about the group, its mission, and what you feel the biggest impacts are it's made to date?
Sure. And I want to congratulate you, by the way, on your book. I really thought it was fantastic. I've been giving it out to a lot of my colleagues. I strongly recommend it. So congratulations on an excellent book. I think it really captured some very important issues about where we are in healthcare right now. So a great contribution.
Thank you so much.
The Leapfrog Group is a nonprofit. We're national. We were founded in the year 2000. By a group of senior executives in large companies who were concerned about healthcare quality and costs. They were particularly concerned about a report that came out from the Institute of Medicine right around that time that was called To Air Is Human, which said that upwards of 100,000 people were dying of preventable medical errors in hospitals every year. And they were astounded by that number, not only because that's a lot of people dying, and when they did the numbers on their own covered lives, for many of them, that meant one of their people were dying, you know, every day or every other day, because many of these executives, such as companies like, you know, GE, covered a lot of people. And they were were they just devastated to think that their people were experiencing this kind of loss, but also that they didn't know anything about it, that in spite of all of their efforts to try to improve healthcare and get their costs down and manage their health benefits well, they had no idea that this was going on and this had such an impact. And so they wanted to change that. So they decided that it was time to have a more transparent marketplace in healthcare. They would, through Leapfrog, this nonprofit, they would start to publicly report on the relative safety of every hospital in the country, and they would encourage their employees and the American public to shop for their hospital care, to think about safety before they walk in the door of a hospital. And in so doing, not only would they protect their employees, but hopefully drive a market for improvements in safety and throughout the country and improve the quality of care nationally. So that's the goal. We publicly report on hospitals, and now we're moving into other settings as well. But our goal is to collect information using the leverage of large purchasers, large companies typically, purchasers of health benefits, using their leverage to suggest to hospitals and other health systems that they give us information that's otherwise not available, and then we publicly report it in the interest of giving consumers what information they deserve to have about how the healthcare system is doing.
So when I was writing the book, I found that even when patients were armed with data and information tools designed to help them decide between, you know, different healthcare providers, they don't seem to be using the tools, you know, to the degree that they can. Are patients ready to fully, you know, activate their emerging role, take advantage of it, or can we make technology easier to use for them in some way?
Well, yes to both. Yes, consumers are increasingly using information, but not anywhere near the level that they should. But that will change. We are in a very fast changing environment, not only in healthcare, but in general. I think consumers, even 5 years ago, shopped very differently for almost everything. And now that's changing as well in healthcare, and it's been changing. And so I think we're seeing those changes in the way consumers are using technology to make decisions about their own healthcare. And when the millennials get a little bit older, just a little bit, and they start to recognize their own mortality and need healthcare more, I think that's when we're going to see the real explosion in the change in healthcare, because they just aren't, they're just intolerant of the idea that they cannot use a smartphone, for instance, to access pretty much any information they could possibly need to make an important decision like a healthcare decision. So I think that we're going to see a major, major shift in consumer use of technology. But I think that one of the big changes we've seen with this newly transparent environment and the is not as much on consumer behavior yet, but on the on how the healthcare industry itself functions in anticipation of consumers increasingly using information to make those kinds of decisions. And that's where we've seen, I think, some very significant shifts in the healthcare industry already.
So can you give me an example of where you're seeing that? I've seen a lot from CMS seems to be really pushing, wanting information to be transparent or putting information out there. But, what do you see happening really on the ground? And can you give me a couple of examples?
Sure. One thing we're seeing with hospitals is an unbelievable focus on their own metrics. I've been out visiting a number of hospitals, and I'm struck by how many of them have on their walls information about how they're doing on a whole variety of patient safety metrics, like how many falls and how many infections and et cetera. And many of them are putting this on walls that are accessible by patients, but they're all over the place. I see metrics everywhere. This is a very, very different. I never saw that 5 years ago, or very rarely saw that 5 years ago. So they're within health systems, they are communicating to clinician how they're doing, and they're looking at real hard data to do that. And so there's just that level of internal transparency that we're seeing that does have a big impact, I think, on performance. And I think also there's a whole new job title in healthcare. And if you've seen this, I think this came about really, it started about 5 years ago, we started to see this, but now it's become much more ubiquitous. This new, brand new job title, chief, usually called the chief engagement officer. And so it's usually a C-suite title. So chief engagement officer, reporting to the CEO of a health system. This person is usually responsible for patient engagement, how patients are experiencing the healthcare system. So you think, well, my God, healthcare should have been doing that from the very beginning, of course. That should have been all about patient engagement, right? That's what everybody should be doing. But, for whatever reason, and there's lots of reasons we could go into for an hour, they have not put the patients at the center of absolutely everything that goes on in healthcare. That's not the tradition in healthcare. So the fact that they're now seeing these new chief engagement officers emerge is another sign that health systems are truly changing their orientation to their work and recognizing that they have to pivot around new priorities, and the new priority is the patient. So we're seeing a real shift.
So now, do you believe that's driven by how the system is being compensated, or is it competition or technology? What do you think is the driver?
I wish I could say it's driven by how they're paying, because how they're being paid, because that would mean that we're seeing what I would say is the most sustainable kind of change. If we were really paying healthcare, if we had a different kind of economic infrastructure of our healthcare system, I would say that's a very long-term change that will benefit all of us. And I think many, both within the healthcare system and outside of it, would like to see that happen and are pushing for that to happen. And we're seeing certainly some inroads around that, in, for example, in the notion of value-based payment, et cetera. And we're seeing that happen. However, I would not say that that right now is the driver. I still think right now, probably the majority of healthcare is paid fee-for-service, with some significant inroads in other models, but still, fee-for-service really does dominate the landscape in terms of the payment of healthcare. Where I see it's driven, though, is that those who are paying is shifting, and shifting in significant ways. Right now, most large employers and many smaller employers have shifted toward high-deductible health plans, which are typically $3,000 deductible, for example, for families, or more for families, and about $1,500 or more for individual plans. And in that, underneath that deductible, so before you hit that deductible, every dime has to be spent by the employee or the covered person, including drugs and other kinds of services that in more traditional health plans were already covered, even if you hadn't already spent the deductible. So I'm not trying to give a boring lecture on insurance policy or anything, but the point is that for many people who are covered by health insurance, they're actually paying most of their health care, if not all of their health care in a given year, out of their own pocket. And that is about 1 in 3 American workers now covered by one of these plans. That's a gigantic shift that's happened over the past 10 years. It's gone from zero covered by one of these to a third of all workers. That's a major, major transformation of our health care system. It's been cited in lots of reports and research studies as a change in our thinking about health care. So the people paying the bills in healthcare now is changing. And when consumers are paying out of their own pocket, it does change the way they behave in the marketplace, as opposed to, for example, paying just the standard copay. They're actually wanting to know, what is that doctor going to bill me for this visit? And that changes how they think about their choice of that doctor and that service. Now, there's lots of debate about whether it's good or bad or whatever, but beyond that is just simply the fact that that's changed the economics of healthcare, which in turn has gotten the attention of healthcare providers, at least, who recognize that they had better become more responsive to consumers because it's the consumers directly paying a lot of their bills.
So, based on that, what should senior healthcare IT leaders, startup companies, we're hearing about Google and Amazon and everything. What can they do to sort of help the providers that are on the ground, clinicians, operational people, improve healthcare delivery, on the ground, how to get them to think about it differently and how to get them to implement it?
I think that for startups, one of the first pieces of advice I would have for any startup is not to approach the healthcare market without someone on your team and in a very significant position on your team who is from the healthcare system and very familiar with it and how your product or service integrates. I say that because I see some startups that come into the market and they don't necessarily have a person who's that integrated, who has that knowledge of the healthcare system. And they come in and they say, well, I have this product and it will, for example, improve patient safety. I can look at all the numbers and say that patient safety is nowhere near where it needs to be. And this product solves all problems in patient safety, or many problems in patient safety. So obviously it's going to be very, very popular, and we're going to do extremely well in the marketplace. They don't necessarily understand some of the barriers that have existed in the market and why great ideas around patient safety have not always sold the way they should, in theory, sell. And it takes really someone from within the healthcare system to understand some of the, frankly, insane nuances of the healthcare system. There are things about the healthcare system that are just don't make any sense in a normal market. So you have to have someone in the inside who understands that, or else you can easily go down a road that sounds logical but doesn't make, just doesn't work in healthcare. So that's my first piece of advice for startups. But in terms of technology, I think that technology that is easily accessible by consumers is always going to be a good start for anyone, but it isn't necessarily going to be immediately impactful and usable in healthcare. It's a longer-term play. As I mentioned, I think millennials, as they come more into the market as consumers, are increasingly demanding that level of accessibility in the healthcare system. The new enterprises we're seeing, like CVS and Caremark, and the work that we're seeing certainly with Warren Buffett, et cetera, Amazon, the entries in the marketplace of traditionally consumer-focused, extremely innovative organizations into the healthcare system suggest that it's coming, but it's not immediate, so don't expect immediate overnight results. But it is something that will definitely be a tipping point soon, so it would be great to be positioned in that marketplace.
So speaking of that trend, is, you know, what do you see as the top healthcare technology trends that are around the areas that you're really working in, sort of transparency, information? I keep thinking of, like, you know, your smartphone knows exactly where you are and can give you pricing nearby or something like that. And then, you know, of course, the big hot button, right? AI, machine learning, and where is that playing a role? And what do you see happening in those areas? And who might be some of the companies that are driving in that area?
I see a lot of work around AI for administration of claims data for purchasers, and attempts to, I think one of the first efforts around AI with regard to purchasers was to try to see if you could predict who was going to need the most health services in the future. So to try and look at claims and patterns of use of healthcare benefits to see if you can, you know, identify those people who were most likely to, for example, have a heart attack in the next 5 years or something, and so to be able to intervene with them earlier. I think that has largely not yielded quite the results I think everyone hoped for. And I think now the effort is really around, at least that I'm seeing for purchasers, is to really look at how can we identify the best practices, the best possible providers, and help guide employees toward or steer them toward those higher performing, more efficient providers. I'm seeing increasing efforts by purchasers, for instance, to give their employees services like second opinion services or other kinds of support so they can navigate the healthcare system. And I think they're using AI a little bit to try and form the right kinds of networks and develop the right kinds of expertise that they need. Because even though Leapfrog provides a lot, I mean, for example, my organization, Leapfrog, provides a lot of quality and safety information, we don't pretend to provide enough of it. And I think that and really the market on information on quality, safety, transparency, cost is really still at an early stage. And I think that employers are starting to use their claims data in more sophisticated ways to get at information that they can use right away, as opposed to waiting for the rest of the country to catch up on quality and safety. So I'm seeing a lot more aggressive efforts to help people navigate the healthcare system by employers.
Obviously, you are talking to the leaders of these employer-led health plans and so forth. What should they be doing more of, or what could they be doing more of to drive this?
Well, the first thing that they should really be doing is accessing or expecting their plans to access all of the data that's available. So as I mentioned, I don't think we ever can say we have quite enough. We're still in the early stages in some respects of getting as much data as we need, but there is good data that's out there. So asking and insisting that their employees can access the best possible data so they can make good decisions about where they're going to seek care, and then use that data in innovative ways and put money on the table for that. There's companies like Ingersoll Rand, for instance, who are actually providing incentives, financial incentives for employees to use their services that they provide to help employees navigate the system. So to give them information on, you know, which are doing a better job of and where they can get second opinions, et cetera. So when their employees use it, they actually get money in their health savings account. That's a really good and innovative way, and I think that it's a simple way too. It's not all that complicated for employers to just say, we want you to just talk to them, try to get a second opinion, make sure you know what you should know about the performance of the providers you're considering, and then use it. I think where we're going to see more technology come into play, and I'm hopeful, but I haven't seen it happen yet, but I would suggest it's a good idea, so I'm hopeful that somebody's going to do it, is where we see employers able to connect their claims from their health benefits with other kinds of health care that they invest in, but they tend to think of as separate. So like workers' compensation or disability, short-term or long-term disability benefits. They're all connected to the health of the same people, but they often see them as totally separate enterprises. And in fact, they're connected and the company's paying for both. So the more we can see longer-term and more integrated assessments of the overall spending around individual patients and how individual people are impacted by a whole variety of things that happen to them in the healthcare system, that's when we're going to start to see more nuance in purchasing behavior. So an example would be, we've had employers start to try to really understand how errors and accidents, infections in hospitals are affecting their own employed population. These things don't appear on standard claims typically. Sometimes they do, but not typically. Typically, if there's, let's say, a medication error made, there's no particular bill, there's no line on your claim that says, you know, you paid for this error. It's kind of buried inside the claim, if it's even noted in the claim, and it's hard for employers to detect it. And yet, these are very common. All the literature on errors and accidents is that they are extremely common, that as many as 1 in 4 patients admitted to a hospital are experiencing some kind of harm. So it's very common, and employers are paying for that, so they really do want to understand where it's happening most often and how, and in so doing, be able to try and prevent it. And there are ways to use AI as well in exploring claims and to look for things like excess length of stays that don't match a diagnosis or things like that, that help them to be able to at least trigger a closer review of a claim and to begin to observe patterns that are troublesome. So I think that what we're seeing for technology, at least from the employer perspective, is an ability to be much more nuanced and much more sophisticated in really looking at the experience of their employees and then using that in more effective ways to help their employees get the right kind of care.
Jumping back to LeapFrog, so what will be happening at LeapFrog in the next couple of years? Where are you taking the organization, and what would you like to see the organization develop and or produce to help this in this long goal?
Our goal is to save people's lives and on a fundamental level, so that you are protected when you go to a hospital or any kind of health system, that your well-being is a primary consideration, which will protect your life. It is a 500 people a day, upwards of 500 people a day, die in preventable errors in hospitals. So it is a major issue for people to be protected from that. So we want to change the market so that that's not happening anymore, and so that people can better protect themselves by making the right choices. And so we continue to focus on patient safety and using all of the technology that is available to us and to our members, our purchasers, to try and do that, whether it's find the errors and publicly report them, which is what we do at LeapFrog for employers as a group nationally, or find them in your own claims for one in particular purchaser, which we advocate that they do, and we help connect them with the resources to do it. And then what we're focusing on right now is hospitals, but we are also in 2019 moving toward ambulatory surgery centers as well as outpatient surgery. 60% of all surgeries are now done on an outpatient basis or in ambulatory surgery centers. So we're going to be looking at safety and quality there as well. And in addition to what we do in reporting this data ourselves, we also advocate with CMS to make sure they report it. And we've been strong advocates since our inception. And in many respects, why CMS currently reports so much data is a lot of the work of people at LeapFrog and our continuing very strong efforts to make sure not only that we can get the information, but also that it's made publicly available to everyone. So we continue to be needed, believe me, to get that information available to people and to get it used, to make it easy for purchasers to use it and in sophisticated ways, and to get to drive that market for better care.
Are there any, I guess, stories that you could share where this information really made a difference with either an individual or a group, whether it's the cost impact or anything of that nature that you could share? Just going back to Moneyball Medicine, which is all about, you know, how data is changing practice of medicine, or how patients look at their care and how they manage themselves, and how that affects, obviously, what we all look at is price or cost, or, you know, a combination of those two things.
Right. And we definitely have had a number of successes that we do think are important. And but you mentioned price and cost, and I just want to make a little comment about that. They're different. The cost of care to the purchaser is one thing. The cost to the provider is another thing. Those are two different things. But for purchasers, they're very interested in price transparency. They want to know how much each provider is charging their employees, and then that's the price, and then they want people to be able to compare among prices. That's really important, but it's not the only thing. And the example that I give around that is that you can know the price that a particular, say, hospital is charging for childbirth, let's say for a normal vaginal delivery and for a C-section, et cetera. You could find out the pricing. But what you also want to know is, what is the rate of C-section? Because that varies tremendously. We see variations in our data. You know, some hospitals will have upwards of 40% or more of all births via C-section. Others will have, you know, below 20% C-section. So a C-section is roughly twice the cost to an employer of and to a consumer. It's twice the cost of a vaginal delivery. So if you're going to a hospital that has a much higher propensity for C-section birth, you're going to pay more. And that's not a price issue. They may charge a slightly lower price for their C-sections. That is a cost issue, and that's a quality issue. So quality and cost and price are all integrated, and it's not enough just to pull out one. You have to look at all of them together. And so our examples of what we've seen with LeapFrog have to do with that integration. An example would be there's a hospital. We publicly report, as I just mentioned, C-section rates by hospital. We're the only source of that information. We ask hospitals through the LeapFrog Hospital Survey to voluntarily report to us on that. It is a standardized rate, so it's adjusted for all of the factors that can go into differences among hospitals in their C-section rates, we try to adjust for those things. And it's a rate that's used by Joint Commission, for example, which is the accrediting body for most hospitals, and other, it's endorsed by the NQF. It's a good measure of C-sections that you can use to compare among hospitals. And again, we do find major variation. So one hospital, which we wrote up in a case study, which is on our website, leapfroggroup.org, and available to anyone if you want to take a look at it, is they recognized through doing the LeapFrog survey that their rate was higher than others and it did not meet the LeapFrog standard. And they, as a result, launched a campaign and they lowered that rate significantly, and now they're meeting the standard. Simple example, maybe, but that is saving a significant amount of dollars to the people, the women who are using that hospital, as well as their employers who are paying for much of their care. So that is an example where we've seen reductions. And we've seen improvements in maternity care for everything that we've been reporting, and in some cases, dramatic. We were reporting on early elective deliveries. These are deliveries that are they're done without a medical reason, too early in the pregnancy, at 37 to 39 weeks, as opposed to 40 weeks, which is when Mother Nature typically decides it's time to give birth. And so they're scheduled anyway, and to try and actually get a jump on Mother Nature so that, I guess, you can get the right doctor, or there's various reasons it's just more convenient to schedule it. But it's not safe. It's not a good thing to do. It's not safe for the baby. It's not safe for the mother. And often results in a NICU stay, which are very expensive, as well as just not safe and not healthy. So those went from a rate when we first started reporting them publicly. Again, we are the only source of that information. Back in 2010, we were reporting a rate of about 17%, and now the rate's down to about 2% nationally. So that's a massive decline, a major change in the delivery of maternity care, and it has definitely saved probably hundreds of thousands of babies from a stay in the NICU and saved a lot of costs as well. So in maternity care, we can definitely see the impact of the transparency movement. And we are not doing the work, by the way. We take no credit for the enormous amount of work it takes to reduce, you know, your rate of early elective deliveries or your rate of C-sections. That's some pretty substantial leadership and hard work by providers. But transparency and markets work. And that's what we see when we start publicly reporting on a measure like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, we all know that, you know, transparency changes a lot of markets. It's when things are not transparent and opaque that strange things happen. Either people comparing themselves to others because they have no idea what the other person is doing, or just the patient being informed. And you know, I always thought to myself, you know, once this information is available, and you can make some pretty interesting apps and analytics to identify different things, either to the providers themselves or to the patients.
Right. And the providers, when they see their own performance in comparison with others, it does help them to understand what they can do better. And it usually motivates and galvanizes change. I mean, that's a key aspect of everything.
So is there anything that I haven't asked you that you would love for the listeners of today to hear about? Either changes in the marketplace, technology, or, you know, things that LeapFrog is working on itself?
Well, one of the areas of technology that we put a lot of emphasis on is the safety of technology used by hospitals, and specifically how safe it is, how well it protects patients from common errors. So an example of what we have classically looked at is computerized physician order entry or provider order entry, depending on who you talk to, but it's CPOE, computerized order entry. It's used for medications, and the prescriber enters an order into the system, the CPOE system. They enter the medication order in for a specific patient. It connects to the patient record, and if that order would cause an allergy problem with the patient, or it's a drug interaction with something else that the patient is taking, then the CPOE system fires an alert at the physician. Typically, it says, you know, the patient's allergic. Do you want to change the order, et cetera? And that has really reduced errors in the hospitals. The most common error made in hospitals by far are medication errors. And so the CPOE systems have had an impact on that. So what LeapFrog has done is we actually give a test to hospitals. It's a web-based time test where they can assess whether their system is alerting the way it should and not alerting too much. You want to avoid frivolous alerts so that physicians don't start ignoring all the alerts. So it's actually kind of a balancing act. But we look for systems that alert when there's a really terrible medication error that's being made. So if a doctor enters or prescriber enters something that would definitely cause the patient significant harm or even kill the patient, we want to make sure that system alerts to them, and we test for that. So we've found that about a third of the orders we've tested do not alert properly, and so there's definitely work that needs to be done. So what I think is the take-home message that we've learned from this work with CPOE, and I think a lot of hospitals have shared with us, is that technology in hospitals is not plug and play. You don't just buy it off the shelf and plug it in. Now, they all sort of know that, but in theory, but in reality, technology is something you have to monitor constantly. You have to be vigilant about it. You have to make sure it's constantly working to the benefit of the patient. And you can't assume that technology replaces all of the other kinds of efforts you make to keep your patients safe. It augments what you do to keep your patients safe, but it doesn't replace it. And I say that too because I think when CPOE, especially when it first came around, a lot of hospitals thought, well, we've got this technology now, so we can skip a step. We cannot have the nurse check the order at the bedside or something like that. They would skip a step. And that's not safe either. We have found, as I said, a lot of orders are not alerted properly, so that step shouldn't be skipped. And also, it actually just doesn't protect the patient enough. But when it's combined with the systems that are already in place and checks and balances around order entry or any other kind of safety issue, you do find that technology can vastly improve the safety for patients. So we've looked at that. We've looked at barcode medication administration, and we're very, very interested in continuing to monitor not just whether hospitals have good technology in place, but whether they monitor it and they use it the most, you know, as effectively as possible. And both of those things have to be combined for technology to be effective.
Well, I want to thank you for your time today. This was wonderful and a great, you know, continuing our conversation over time. I'm sure that we will talk many times in the future on many different things. And I can only wish you guys extreme success because I'm also getting a little bit older. So I you want the system to work as well as it can.
Right. We all have a role to play in making sure that happens. And I really do appreciate your book. So thank you for writing it and for making it available. It's been a great resource.
Thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that's it for this episode. Join me for the next episode where I speak to Fabian Beckers, who is the CEO of Arteris, a medical imaging startup that is creating products at the intersection of artificial intelligence, the cloud, and medical imaging. We will be digging into how their FDA-cleared end-to-end cloud infrastructure for medical imaging is changing the practice of radiologists. If you enjoyed Moneyball Medicine, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. It is greatly appreciated. Hope you join us next time. Until then, farewell.